Yo, check, check. What's good, everybody? This is Megan Rand. Thank you for being here. This is another exciting episode of Matt Mania, brought to you by me and all my hard work. I'm actually at home this time. I got a really, really awesome special guest, my man Derek Montilla, a.k.a. Cap Caveman on Twitter. He covers the D-backs for the Sports Cave. He covers wrestling and does the podcast, The Steel Cage, and The Dirty Sheets. He does so much stuff. I think that he's a guy who does almost as much as me. So really excited to chat with him. We talked about sports a little bit. So don't be too upset if you aren't really a sports guy. We did a little bit of Phoenix area sports because he's a Phoenix dude. Now, it is back to school time. I've recently been made aware of. It's hard for me to keep up as a teacher. So when I see people start talking about back to school and sending their kids away the first day of schools, and you know, and some kids are school age for the first time, and that's really been crazy. My nephew on my wife's side is going to school, and like I remember when he was born, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm old. So that's crazy. So if you are going back to school, teachers or students, you know, best of luck. Keep it popping. Get a good podcast to travel to school with, and hopefully we'll get you in the right mood to tackle the day, like my podcast. Anyway, enough self-promo, because you're listening to my show, so obviously you know what it is. Thanks to my last week's guest, Kalik, for being awesome. Thanks for the feedback on that show, as well as thank him for putting me onto Uber Eats, because that was awesome. I found a new place by me because of that, an Asian fusion joint. So I had a bao for the first time. B-A-O. Bao. Is that how you pronounce that? I think. Let's just say it's the how you pronounce it. But moving on to some more important things. I really am excited about this episode. We get to talk a lot of wrestling. We talk a lot about music. We talk a lot about, a little bit about sports. And our expectations of what the new era has been all about. I honestly gotta say, man, SmackDown has been decent. Raw has been good. I can't help but shaking the feeling that Raw is the A show, SmackDown's the B show. I don't know what they gotta do, but hopefully they'll get it together. They got some cool small storylines going that I'm into on both shows, though. So, overall, it's not bad. Alright, I was just at a family reunion this past week in Columbus, Ohio with my wife's family, and it was a lot of fun, man. Like, I wasn't sure how I was going to dig it, but, you know, family is love, you know, good food, good drink, good people. It's a great time. So, I know a lot of my friends, we talk about it, like, not being family reunion people, like, not being into it, but honestly, I gotta say, like, if you got some family, you know, like, cherish it and try to help organize a family reunion or something, because it's a great escape, man, and it feels good to be around people and love and all that. And I know every family's not like that. Every family's got some stuff, but you know, life's short, man, so I think that you should spend some time with your family as long as you can. And family isn't just blood, you know what I mean? Just, it's people that are there for you, people that spread love. So yeah, do that. Got a couple shows coming up this weekend. I will be in LA. I'm actually going to see Adele. So that isn't my show. But that Sunday, I'll be in Riverside, California at the Vibe. Brick to your face, son. That's the name of the company puts it together. That's going to be fun. My man, The Real World Sound is going to be there. And a lot of others that I've rocked with before. So it's going to be a fun, nerdy, underground hip-hop show. Like, I feel so good knowing that those things exist now, because they haven't, or in the past they hadn't existed. So anyway, I got that. We going to MizzouCon in Miami the very next weekend. I'm going to Miami. And then from there to the only place that could be compared to Miami, Warwick, Rhode Island for TippleCon the very next weekend. So I'll be out there. And then the next weekend after that, San Fran for San Francisco Comic-Con. And then I'm going to Japan for a week. I'll be playing in Yokohama and Tokyo. Info on that and more is on my site, MeganRain.com/shows. I just redid my whole site, man, and I don't know anything about the web, but I did that. So I'm proud of myself. But anyway, it's a good meaty episode, so let's get into it. Derek Montilla, me, Megan Rand, and we'll chat about all kinds of things, and I'll see y'all on the other side. Make sure to keep messaging me, let me know you're listening, 5-star and all that good stuff, and let me know what you want to see or hear on it. All right, I will talk to you soon. I'm Megan Rand, and I love you. Peace, y'all. It's Matt Mania. Oh yeah, ring the bell. What's going on, everybody? This is Megan Rand, and I'm back with another episode of Matt Mania, and I have a special guest. My special guest is going to introduce himself in a minute. I had the pleasure of getting on his podcast, and we talked about some great things on the steel cage. But this man does several things in several different places, and I was really, really excited to be able to lock him down. He's also an Arizona resident like myself. So, Derek, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. Thank you for taking some time out and chatting with me. I am... Oh, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, cool. All right. So, yeah, I'm excited to chat with you, man. I appreciate you guys having me on the Steel Cage a while back. Avid listener. And I appreciate what you guys do. So, let's just get started with you personally. I want to figure out who you are. What's your history? Because you wear many hats.
I do.
And you do. You're kind of a guy like me with a lot of different things going on. So, really quickly, what do you do? And what makes it so special?
Well, I you know, what I get to do, honestly, is cover things that I really have enjoyed my entire life. You know, the two things I've always been into ever since I was a little kid was wrestling and sports. And, mm-hmm. You know, I was lucky enough to fall into the sports gig here in Phoenix and get to cover some of the local teams. I cover the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Phoenix Suns, the ASU Sun Devils. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be given that opportunity. It was great. It was a blessing. But I'm above all, I'm really just the biggest wrestling fan. So when I had the opportunity to kind of transition some of the journalism I was doing into wrestling and realizing that, you know, there's people that actually, you know, wanted to hear, you know, what I had to say, it felt really good. And, you know, expanded me being a wrestling fan. I went from just kind of watching it and catching the occasional show to traveling to WrestleMania every year and going to stuff like PWG in California.
Nice.
And it's been a blast, man. I love the guys that I work with on the Steel Cage. They're, you know, some of my best friends in the world now, and I met them through doing this. So it's been kind of special for me to meet the people I've met and do the things I've done. I mean, it was completely unexpected. And to talk to some of the people I've had an opportunity to speak with and interview has been absolutely amazing.
That's awesome, man. So for the people out there who may be listening who want to do stuff like this, I mean, because I get it all the time where people are like, hey, I like sports. I like wrestling. I just want to talk about it all the time, you know. How did it happen? I mean, it sounds like a simple but complex question, but would you say that there was a particular moment that led to you then being able to work your journalism into covering wrestling and things like that? Or how does it happen?
Well, like I had some friends that I would write an occasional long-winded email to just for laughs, you know, I had good support from my buddies who would just tell me like, hey, you're kind of wasting, you know, you're wasting your talent doing, you know, this day job that you're doing and you know, you really should. So that encouragement kind of led me on to do more. But the biggest thing was, you know, falling in line with someone that was a like-minded person that wanted to do the same kind of goals I had and, you know, taking it seriously. It's not easy. So, you know, we started with kind of a crummy website that we were just doing what we were doing in. And I'll give credit even to my partner, Paul, that I work with, because I didn't have a lot of faith at first. And next thing I know, this guy was at a Suns practice doing a video interview with one of the players, you know, and sometimes like that's all it takes is having the belief that it's that easy. It really is sometimes if you're dedicated to it and you know, you want to do something in it, it doesn't even take you really necessarily getting a job with a company to do it. You can start on your own. You can start your own website. You don't even have to, you know, pay for it. There are free sites out, free hosting sites. There's all sorts of stuff to do out there. Even us, we started out with just covering, you know, practices and games and, you know, being given one day passes to come to a practice here and there or whatever, and basically just showing that you're professional and that you're there to actually cover the sport and do a job. Nice. I think there's a lot of people that work in sports and such that do it or want to do it for the joy of like watching sports. My personal opinion is it's work. It's like anything. And once you start doing it, you realize quickly that it is work. You know, one of the enjoyments of going to sports is to sit in the audience with your friends and drink a beer and watch the game and relax. When you're there at your at a game by yourself and you're covering it and you have to take notes, and it's a lot more like it's a lot more like class. You have to pay attention constantly. Yeah, exactly. You start to realize that, you know, it's a grind and it's like any other job. It's absolutely an amazing opportunity. And there's times where I can't believe that I get to do the things I get to do still to this day. But it's also, it also takes me away from my family just like any job. And it has long hours. I find myself, working until 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night, doing a story or covering a game, and then still having to get up at 5:30 in the morning and get my daughter ready, to go to daycare, so it's trying at times, but I will say that the key to it is, starting small and, trying to put something out there that people want to read and that people want to listen to. If you're doing a podcast, do a podcast. I mean, it's podcasts aren't hard to do. And, one of the biggest things about them is if you're interested in doing this, start doing it now. And even if nobody's listening, at least you're recording yourself and you're getting better. I know I'm still light years away from being as good as a lot of my colleagues and people I know that do this. But I figure if I'm not podcasting, if I'm not, putting myself out there and trying to accomplish my goals, I'm not going to be practicing and getting better. I'm just going to be sitting around wishing I was doing it. So, even if you go out there and you get some bad iTunes reviews like I have in the past, you got to kind of just press on, man, and do your thing.
Absolutely. I think the tough skin and the part you mentioned about just getting that practice in is just so important. I think a lot of people overlook that. It's just do it, even if someone's, even if no one's listening, you got one listener, whatever.
Exactly.
Getting that practice in is just so important.
Because you wouldn't do it otherwise. And that's the one thing I try to tell, a lot of people, because they see that I do a lot of stuff. And they're like, wow, you do a lot of shows, you do, a lot of interviews. And my thought process is, each one is different. There's complications, there's successes, there's failures. I had one interview one week that I felt was the greatest thing I ever did. And then the next week I thought I was terrible, And then I talked to my, the guys I do the steel cage with, and they're just like, yeah, you're an insane person. They were both good. You're fine. Stop being so critical. But to this day, I'm still that same way. And I think that's the key, is to never feel like you're at the top of your game. You constantly need to practice and put work into it. And I think that's the biggest key.
Absolutely. All right. So let's get into some wrestling, shall we?
Oh yeah.
First, Derek, I got to ask, what's your earliest wrestling memory? I mean, it'll probably be kind of dating you in a little bit, but I want to get an idea of how you came into it. And then we'll work up to the present.
My first wrestling memory is a foggy memory of going to a live event at Veterans Memorial Coliseum here in Phoenix and seeing both the Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man Randy Savage in the same night. They fought basically squash matches because it was a house show type event, but it forever changed me. And I remember immediately like trying to find wrestling. Like that was the one thing as a kid we had a different life back in the 80s when you tried to find a television show. It wasn't, you had no idea when it was on. You couldn't even find it in the listings sometimes, but then all of a sudden there it would be on a Saturday night and I would be lucky enough to be watching it. So I will say that my first wrestling memory aside from that live event is watching an episode of Saturday Night Main Event, right?
Main Event.
Yeah. And it was Jake the Snake versus Macho Man, and Jake the Snake, I believe, kissed Miss Elizabeth, and Macho Man went insane and got disqualified and made Jake the Snake's head bleed. And that was the point where I went and looked for my older brothers to prove to them that wrestling was not fake as they had been claiming, that it was in fact real. And yeah, that was forever ingrained in me as well.
Ah, okay, nice. All right, I found out from my last guest last week, my buddy Kalik, that did you know? I'm sure you probably know since you've been here a while. That Ultimate Warrior had a wrestling school out here.
Yes, yeah, up by the, it was up north, right? Like by the Grand Canyon.
I didn't know where it was, but I did not know that, like, at all. Like, this was something I just learned. I was like, really? What?
Yeah. And that was a dangerous time for me because I was of that age to be thinking about doing that when he had that school here. And I won't lie, man, there were some times that if he would have been a little bit more straightforward and just like a normal person, I might have considered it. But when I went to his website and saw some of like the crazy Ultimate Warrior style rants being used to describe the kind of training you were going to get, I was like, all right, no, that's all right. I'll pass on that, man.
Kind of scary
I'm good
stuff.
Dog.
Like, I don't know about that.
Like, we will teach you to be both spiritually and physically fit and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, no, all right, I'm good on that. Thanks.
Wow. Okay, so going up to the present right now, WWE, let's just mainly focus on. What's your opinion of the product nowadays? I'm sure you guys have chatted plenty about the new era and the new SmackDown, new Raw, the draft and all that. But what do you think right now overall of the product? Are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm optimistic, definitely. I'm optimistic because of the direction that they're going overall. Even if they're not committed to it right now, or even if they're having some growing pains with doing the brand split, like, I get it. They need the space to grow. And as it stands, there's way too many guys, you know, especially when you look down the road at 6 months from now and you're talking about Austin Aries and Nakamura and a lot of the guys from NXT, you know, the Revival, all being up on the roster and going on one show. I think that would have been really difficult. So I don't mind the brand split, even though I feel like, you know, there's like a lot of people have said, there's a lot of unevenness to the roster. SmackDown looks a little light. Raw is pretty decent, but overall, you find yourself still kind of scrambling to put together certain matchups. You know, the women's division and tag team division and both look a little weak right now. But I think that's all going to change. I think I'm really excited about the stuff they're doing, just as far as the people they're acquiring. You know, bringing in guys like Gargano and Ciampa and just that whole Cruiserweight Classic thing they're doing. It makes me feel like they aren't so committed to just doing one kind of wrestling, you know?
Yeah.
We had that stubbornness from them for a while, you know, with a lot of things. And I feel like the way that they've, you know, kind of embraced the whole reality era thing, it's been smart and it's worked. And as long as they continue down this path and continue to kind of evolve into, you know, a company that really tries to embrace this indie market, if you want to call it that, you know, the style of wrestlers you would find at a PWG show or at Ring of Honor, and bring those guys in and you know, see the value in them. I think that they're going to be in great shape a year from now.
I think so. You know, you might have just hit something. Every week I feel like I get a little more clarity on what I think the new era actually is. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know, but I feel like maybe that's it, kind of this indie centric kind of way of thinking, way of booking, and just a different style of guy, you know what I mean? Different styles of wrestlers. And I think that may be what this new era is, you know, all about for them. It's just adopting some different, you know, some different ways, which is exciting to me because, I mean, it's been the same for a while. And has there been a moment where you kind of tuned out, like throughout the history, your history of wrestling, where you have a few years maybe or a year or a month where you just were like, you know what, I'm done? I had a few years like that. I think it involved like a Miz title run and some other things.
Yeah.
Where I was just like,
John Cena being overly powerful there.
Cena Mania, Super Cena, you know.
Super Cena, yeah. you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think, like, there was a time I way back, you know, I talk about my older brothers kind of scrutinizing me, but when I was a kid, you know, it really was looked down upon differently than it is now, you know. Even though my dad was from Puerto Rico and appreciated the everything about wrestling, he still kind of mocked it like he did a lot of things. And, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't feel, especially when I started maturing and getting into becoming a teenager, I started, you know, kind of putting it off to the side, but I'd still always keep up on it. You know, I'd always kind of watch Superstars when they had it on Sunday mornings and gave you like that 30-minute recap of what happened during the week. Mm-hmm. You know, but like there were some times during the Cena years, I think, honestly, when they did the WCW invasion and it fell so flat, I remember being really disappointed by that. And like, again, that was a time period where I didn't turn it off completely, but I definitely checked out and I wasn't watching it every week and I wasn't, you know, keeping up to date on everything. I just kind of scanned it or, you know, would read what happened on the internet or whatever. But yeah, there was some times definitely during, I think from 2000 to 2010, there were a couple of spots where it felt like, you know, wrestling was kind of boring. And I think bringing back ECW and CM Punk and a lot of that really sparked my interest in yeah. you know, coming back to the product. And it's funny because that's very similar to what they're doing now, you know, bringing in a guy that actually has a history and has, you know, a lot of buzz about him independently without being a part of WWE and then coming in as like this free agent type. It was a brilliant move. And I feel like he is to this day kind of the blueprint for them realizing the value in someone like that. You know, he was the biggest star in their company at one point. Daniel Bryan too. He's another guy that, you know, 10 years ago they would have never looked at or considered, or if they did bring him in, they would have been relegated to some sort of cruiserweight thing or tag team or whatever, you know, but not given the opportunity that those two guys were given. So, and they fought for it. They deserved it. It's not like they were given anything, but you know, I think for me, that's the kind of wrestler that I've always been interested in. You know, even back in the day, like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, and those guys were way more interesting to me than any big muscular, you know, bodybuilder type. So,
yeah, I think the way those guys got over is just being, you know, even looking a little different and looking like, hey, so that fans could be like, that could be me, or,
yeah,
you know, absolutely. That's like the guy down the street, you know? Right. So it gives a little bit of that, you know, that reality surge, which I guess they didn't necessarily want back in the day. You wanted these guys to be living, you know, comic book characters or, you know, and things like that. Like, I still remember the first time I saw Kane, you know, and I was just like, oh my God, like, what is this?
Awesome.
You know, and just getting so that awesome. Those chills, like I was watching a movie and this giant monster just knocked the wall down, you know.
God, I loved the red and the purple lights that they used so much during those segments. Like, it was so effective. And it made me like, yeah, like you said, it gave me chills watching it. And I was compelled. That was during that time frame that I speak of where I was kind of not watching it. But stuff like that, that's what brought me back. Like, you put something out there like that on TV and, you know, I couldn't help but be interested by it. So they've done a good job. And I think that's the thing is during, like, that 2000 time period when everybody started using like a normal name like John Cena and Randy Orton, like a lot of that, you know, a lot of that intrigue and mystery and, you know, kind of over the top, sure, maybe campiness, but, you know, over the top kind of storytelling was gone. And, you know, they'd bring out Undertaker every once in a while, you know, and have him come out and do the shtick. But, you know, until they started realizing, you know, that we want to see guys like that. You know, characters like Bray Wyatt came around. That kind of renews my faith that you can have a little bit of everything. You know, you can have the MMA guys that are going to come off like, you know, real ass kickers, and then you can have someone like Bray Wyatt that you question what the source of his power is and what the mystical nature of him is. And, you know, is he a cult leader or is he Satan? I don't know, but you know, it's amazing.
When's the last time you like legit marked out at an event?
At an event, I would say it was when Chris Jericho was a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble here in Phoenix. It was just one of those moments where, you know, he wasn't part of WWE. It was a very well-kept secret. And when he came out, I jumped up and down like a little kid in one place. I stood on my chair. I hugged strangers. It was amazing. And again, it wasn't a significant thing. You know, he didn't win it or anything, but man, it was just his presence and, you know, just Jericho. He's such an awesome character. He's such an awesome performer. And it was such a shock. I remember that being like one of those rare moments that I just, and like other people around me felt the exact same way. Like I remember looking at other people and other grown men are just jumping up and down and screaming and, you know, it was great. But I did have a mark out moment, you know, when Ambrose won the title. I thought that was really cool just because I kind of jokingly predicted it, but I didn't, my heart wasn't in it. I just kind of something I said on the show, but I didn't really think that he was going to win the Money in the Bank and then cash in the same night. And when everything went the way it did, I did. I found myself even at home, even though I wasn't there, doing the same thing. Like where I was just like, I saw it happening. It was happening. I just stood up, and it was like when I was watching the Cardinals in the Super Bowl. I'm just sitting there like, oh my God, this is it. This is it. You know?
Nice. Oh man, I think being there, I've probably done it every single time I've gone to an event. But I think in person, I'm just watching it on TV. I think my last time, it might have been pretty recent. I mean, honestly, I think Sasha winning the women's title like totally caught me, threw me for a loop. I might have had a second of a mark out there.
Yeah,
I was not expecting that.
Teary-eyed at that one, man. That one felt special. That felt like there's few people that can really get you to feel that emotional about them winning a title. I mean, we saw Zack Ryder, you know, win it, and I was standing like 20 feet away from him at WrestleMania when he did, and I was like, meh, whatever, you know. and watching Sasha on Monday, I remember like tears welling up in my eyes and feeling like I was watching a longtime friend finally succeed at their goals in life. It's interesting that, you know, the women's division is in that position that it's in now, and she's a big part of it. She's a big reason why it's so good.
Oh, absolutely. I think I saw her open the show this week on Raw, and I was just like, wow, like I don't remember the last time that's happened when the women's champion started off the show. So very impressive. This is definitely a new thing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, have you seen the last few Raws and SmackDowns?
I have. Okay. Absolutely.
So let's just talk about them. I guess, in your opinion, which show has the lead right now? And what do you like about each of them, and what do you maybe not like about each of them?
I think Raw has the lead just because of their roster. And I think that they did some really great things right out of the gate. I think that their first episode after the brand split was everything you wanted. Like you said, we got the Sasha victory. We got Finn Balor becoming number one contender. We got a lot of really good things, you know, in that first night. And I think it was hard for them to sustain that level of excitement. So all things considered, I felt like, you know, the second episode, the follow-up was pretty decent. It was more realistic. It was more of what we can expect, you know, from their normal programming. I felt like everything they did on that first episode of Raw was too perfect. I was suspicious. I was like, there is no way it can be this good going forward, you know? And SmackDown, I think, came out of the gate a little slower. I think that SmackDown definitely has some criticisms about it. There's a lot of people that, you know, heard what they were saying and were, you know, like myself, I was really expecting that show to be the show that was a wrestling show, you know, and I was expecting to see like a, you know, Kevin Owens and a Cesaro over there versus all of those guys, you know, being lumped together on Raw still. Yeah. And Randy Orton and Cena being over on SmackDown with all of that talk about, you know, how they were going to make it about the wrestlers and not about the other stuff. But with that being said, it's starting to make more sense to me because I feel like even though they've split it evenly now, I feel like SmackDown is going to get a lot of the newer people. You know, we saw the announcement Shelton Benjamin's coming over, which is awesome. You know, Rhino's predictably possibly going to be part of the roster. So it feels like what they're having is a mix of, you know, some superstar level talent with the really new talent. It'll be matchups that we haven't seen before, and it'll give the new guys the ability to kind of, you know, get that rub from guys like John Cena and Randy Orton. So I think it'll work well. But right now, I would still definitely say that Raw has the advantage. Raw, you know, still feels like you know, the A show and, mm-hmm. You know, the way that the rosters are split up right now and the way that they have the titles over there, just it feels like Raw has more going on. I'm not super excited about them bringing all of these titles to both shows.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I'm not a fan of that at all. I don't want extra titles. Like, I just don't feel like that's going to do anything for...
Right, and the Cruiserweight title is going to be on Raw, so we're talking about, like, two tag teams, two women's championships, two, you know, men's championships, two mid-level championships, a Cruiserweight, you know. It's a lot of belts. And I get it. I get, like, that they have these aspirations to really bring in a lot of talent, and, you know, they have a lot of guys in the Performance Center training and all of that, but... It feels like a lot.
It does. I was at Comic-Con this year, and there was a WWE panel, and Becky Lynch was on it, and she was pretty real about it. Someone asked her, like, hey, what do you think about being on SmackDown and yada, yada, yada. And she said, well, it's cool, but there's no title on that show right now, and I don't really know what their plans are, but, you know, everybody's in this to be a champion at some level or some point. And it's funny that I feel like now belts don't really matter as much, but I think that titles do mean something, you know? So they were saying, I think AJ said it too, like, these guys were just as in the dark as we were for watching, you know, a lot of guys didn't know where they were going. They didn't know what the champions were going to be doing and things like that. And they're still sorting it out. So I don't know. I feel like are titles important or... are they not? Like, I guess I would prefer a floating champion who just goes to each show, I think.
Yeah.
I think that needs to be what happens, I think.
I would, too. I would say that, you know, you're going to have brand-specific pay-per-views, so you can have, like, the number one contender come from that show no matter what, and the champion from either show is defending no matter whether they're on Raw or SmackDown. But if it's mm-hmm. a SmackDown pay-per-view, have one of the SmackDown women challenge for the title at that show. I think that that would allow them to do, you know, number one contender situations, you know, small tournaments, stuff like that to keep mm-hmm. it interesting. I don't see them being able to really put together a women's division with the number of women they have on SmackDown right now. So yeah. if you at least put them in a pool where they're constantly vying to be the number one contender for the next thing, then that basically kind of makes the number one contendership kind of like the championship on that show to a certain extent when there's not a show, when the belt's not there.
Okay.
But like the Intercontinental belt, for instance, that was my idea with that, was to make that essentially the SmackDown championship, you know, like
I was thinking that too, like that should be the main event every SmackDown, I think.
Yeah. Like, I mean, people like us still hold a lot of prestige in the Intercontinental title, even though it seems like WWE doesn't. You know, yeah. And so you could easily have that be the other show's main championship, and that still allows you to use the U.S. title as the mid-card belt. And, you know, if you put it on SmackDown by itself and you have the number one contenders, you know, fighting over it and the top guys, then it's still going to be seen as that show's main championship. It would have made a lot more sense to do it that way instead of, you know, creating a universal belt and all these other belts that they're going to eventually create.
I mean, I think this is where what started making me tune out last time is just because now everybody's a champion. It's like, let's just make new titles for them, you know? And I don't know. I don't know if that's what AJ was kind of getting at in his kind of long rant with Cena on the last SmackDown.
Yeah.
But he mentioned something about, you know, you don't get a second place trophy and things like that. And I thought that was interesting because that's always the way I imagined it when they're adding new titles instead of just fighting for the title that's there, you know? I don't know. What do you think about that?
I wonder if they truly think that we feel the same way about the titles. Like, do they think by creating another championship belt that we're like, oh, yeah, these are both equal now? Like, it was just like the big gold belt. We always saw that as being the lesser than because it's not the real WWE belt.
Yeah.
And they even treated it as such. Like, you know, significant people held it, but yeah, they didn't treat it as the same way they did as the WWE heavyweight title.
No, they didn't.
No.
It wasn't even like main event, you know, on the big pay-per-views, like they would always do the WWE title last, you know, kind of thing. So, I don't know. But anyway, moving forward.
I'm hopeful, but I will say that it's a lot of wrestling, you know, to keep up with. And I think that's another thing, that's the simplicity of having less champions is, you know, it's not as much to keep up with. And you don't feel as exhausted trying to, you know, factor in all these champions on all these different shows and, you know, all this that they're doing. I mean, I love that they're doing what they're doing. And it really feels like they're trying to put enough product out there for you to just enjoy whatever show you want to watch. You know?
I don't know. You say exhaustion. I don't think they're worried about our exhaustion. But originally, they don't care. They're like, consume it all. Like,
yeah, money.
Yeah, but I was thinking the reason they were doing this was to avoid the talent's exhaustion. You know, like, all right, we have a completely different roster on this show, so you don't have to travel as much. You know, that's my original thought was that they were going to lessen their load. So if that happens, then I guess I'm okay with it. But
that's a good point too, because honestly, I've already seen tweets from talent saying stuff like, really enjoyed my weekend off, ready to get, you know, to work on SmackDown live tonight and stuff like that. And you can just tell, like, these are people that normally have had to travel 360 days out of the year. So it's rough on them. And to have this opportunity to at least work a little bit less, like to have 2 personal days off per week instead of traveling, you know, every day all week and having a half day to yourself while you're in a town on tour, it makes a big difference for a lot of them, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's a huge difference. Like, I don't know how these guys do it. I mean, from the little bit of time that I've been around them, I'm just like, this is an insane schedule that they keep. And it's like, how do you get to see family? Like, how do you do anything, you know? It's insane to me.
Did you ever hear Brock Lesnar's interview on Highly Questionable by any chance?
No, I didn't.
Okay, because it's crazy because Brock Lesnar is such a tough guy and he's so big and he's so this and, you know, he's a monster and all this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he started describing, you know, what it's like to tour with the WWE. And he's like, it's just the worst. You know, he's like, I don't like flying. I don't like staying in hotel rooms. I don't like, you know, doing that. I like, you know, I'm a simple guy that likes to be at home. And mm-hmm. like, just to hear him talk about it, you know, like it's obviously he's, you know, been there, he's done it, he didn't like it, that's why he kind of left and went and did the UFC thing and trying to do other options, and has a great contract now with the WWE and his schedule. But, you know, to hear someone say that like him, it just kind of really makes you understand it's tough, you know, because that's a tough dude saying that, and he's still like, yeah, no, I don't like it, I don't like being on the road, I don't want to do that, that's no, I don't, you know. And so it's not easy. And I mean, I give these people all the respect in the world for what they do, and you know, it's cool to see someone like Sasha, you know, mm-hmm. get recognized. It's cool to see some of these younger guys get recognized. And you know, aside from what you were saying, I definitely think that's the other big benefit is, you know, a lot of these people that are working their ass off to do this, they're going to get recognized sooner than they would have had this just been one roster and one champion and one this and one that. So
that's true.
You know, even though it might not be super important to, you know, wrestling fans who are really in the know and kind of feel it's oversaturated with the belts, you know, the regular casual fan is still going to think it's something awesome when they win it. And mm-hmm. to them personally, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think about it from the perspective of a guy who attends shows, and I will be upset if let's just say before the draft, I bought tickets to a Raw that was coming to my town, and now I'm not going to see whoever I wanted to see. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that it will definitely, I think, turn off, or at least a guy like me, from thinking like, oh, I'm not going to get to see the New Day if I go to a SmackDown. I don't know.
Yeah, you know? No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, they did move, you know, certain guys around in a key formation so that they tried to get all of your favorites on both shows so that, you know, you wouldn't be like, oh, SmackDown's coming to town, I'll skip it, you know, which kind of feels like that. But then if you know, there's still American Alpha and a couple of other guys, you know, and you're just like, ah, I love Dean, I really want to see it, you know. So it does put you in a position. But I'm with you 100%, man. I think, you know, my only thought on that, at least from personal experiences, is one time I went to a SmackDown that had all of these people advertised, and it was like an anniversary show for SmackDown. And every single person they advertised
all appeared via video message. Every single one of them, including John Cena that night. John Cena wasn't even there at the arena, right? But at the very last video they showed was Kurt Angle, who was with the WWE at the time, and he made a statement that he's like he made a statement about none of those people being there that night, and that he was going to create his own moment that night. And that's the night that I saw him shoot the Big Show with a tranquilizer dart and shave his head. And it was one of my greatest memories in wrestling history. So like now I have this weird thing where even when things start to go bad, I just sit there and wait. I'm like, all right, this could, never mind. This could turn around. Let's give it a sec.
All right. Okay. I think we're going to take a quick little break and I'm going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about SummerSlam, maybe make some predictions. And I'm going to talk a little bit of sports. I'm going to talk some Suns. All right, it's Matt Mania, and I'll be back in a sec.
What's Kate Murdoch here, and I want to talk to you about something real fresh, real new that myself and Megaran are doing now, and it involves you, the fans. Myself and Megaran just launched a Patreon, a monthly way for you all to subscribe to us and what we do. For as little as $1 a month, you'll get free exclusive downloads, a guaranteed song a month, and if you pledge at the $10 level, you'll get a free project a month, whether it be something we do together, whether it's something solo, a side project that I engineer or produce, it's guaranteed exclusive for you Patreon supporters. So, if you really like what we do, then this is the time to get down and join us. We are trying to bring back that Nintendo Fun Club vibe because this is essentially a fan club for the real fans. So check it out, patreon.com/bitsandrhymes. That's patreon.com/bitsandrhymes. And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
What's up, it's Mega Ran, and I'm here with Derek Montilla, and we are talking all types of things, mainly wrestling, of course, as we do on this show. So I'm back, and I want to really quick talk about SummerSlam, which is coming down the pike, and seems to be a pretty stacked lineup. I think we got some good matches here, matches that before this draft I never would have thought we would see. So,
not at all.
I think that's a cool thing. I mean, I would have told someone that you were crazy if you told me that Dolph Ziggler was going to be in a world title match at a pay-per-view after losing to Baron Corbin a month ago. So,
and SummerSlam of all things, like that's not just a
this is a big event, yeah.
Right? Yeah, that's not just a middle of the way pay per view. That's a big deal, man. And it's fun. I think that's the best part about this is, Dolph Ziggler should be at this level, even though he hasn't been. And it's interesting to see like what happened on SmackDown with Dean Ambrose kind of antagonizing him. I feel like they're going with Dolph Ziggler back in a heel direction, which I feel is a really good move for him. But more importantly, I'm the other match that I would never have believed is Seth Rollins facing Finn Balor for a championship. Like that's amazing as well. I mean, they really delivered with the two championship matches, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if this match is going to go last, but it was the first one made was Brock versus Randy Orton. Brock's coming off a win in MMA. Also, there's a little bit of a controversy with some enhancement things going on. From what I understand about that is I don't know what's happening or what they're going to do about that. But this will be an interesting match, I guess. Maybe you could tell me, have these guys ever faced each other before?
I don't believe so, because from my knowledge, Randy Orton was... Like, you know, the WWE loves to erase the history when it doesn't go their way. Yeah. And Randy Orton's first championship reign was essentially made to erase the memory of Brock Lesnar because he had he was the youngest champion prior to that. And yeah, they had a chance for Orton to win it prior to him being older than Brock was. So, you know, I don't think so, unless it occurred back in that period of time before Randy Orton was really a big name when he was still kind of in his initial phase, but I don't recall. And I think that this match that I really wasn't interested in was given the exact amount of life it needed on Raw on Monday. I thought it was perfect. I mean, I went from, I'm not going to say I wasn't interested to see it, but I just definitely the other two matches overshadowed it. And what they did with the main event on Raw, it was exactly what I needed to see in order for me to, to be back into it. I will say though, it took me a moment. Like, this is how the brand split hasn't even set in with me, because they kept making such a big deal about Randy Orton being there, and I was like, what? But Randy Orton was on SmackDown this week. Why is this such a big deal?
Right.
Like, and then I remember, or I realized, I was like, oh, he's not supposed
to be there.
Okay. Just took me a second because the brand
split. It's still new. Well,
it's still new. Yeah, it's still
very fresh, you know? So we're like, wait, isn't he supposed to be there? You know? Strangely, Brock showed up on SmackDown. Same thing. He's like, he's not supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. And he had on like the Suplex City shirt from Atlanta, which was where they were Monday, which I thought was cool. Just showed a little continuity going with that.
And I'm not getting a new shirt for you. This is SmackDown. Screw you guys.
Right. Like, why would I have
the Atlanta shirt?
Why would I have a shirt for Nashville? I'm not even supposed to be here.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So I thought that was great. How do you expect this match to go? I saw some rumors somewhere around where they're like, oh, Brock's supposed to win, especially coming off, you know, a real victory. You know, how can he lose? But after the drug test thing, I feel like maybe, from what I read, that they're kind of second guessing it and they're thinking about maybe letting Orton go over. So what do you think?
I would say Orton right now is going to be needed on SmackDown, and Brock might just go back into being gone for the next 3 months after SummerSlam comes and goes. So I don't know what the direction with that is, but if that's the case, then yeah, I would give Randy Orton absolutely the victory. I think it would legitimize him once again as being one of the top guys. You know, you beat Brock Lesnar, it's like beating The Undertaker. You know, it doesn't even have to mean anything, and it means something. So
yeah,
and that's what Brock beating The Undertaker did at WrestleMania. It made Brock into this new guy that could legitimize people simply by losing to them. I mean, just having him get RKO'd on Monday was kind of a big deal. So, I mean, I think that it's a complete smart direction for them to go with building Randy Orton up and keeping in that direction. So with that being said, since that's the smart way to go, I'm sure Brock Lesnar will win.
All right. Yeah, that's usually
100% sure that Brock Lesnar will probably win, because it doesn't seem like they care about the drug stuff anymore. Like, if they did, I mean, even though Roman, for instance, isn't in the main title picture, and I'm happy with him being in, you know, I'm okay with Roman being there, and I'm okay with him being in another feud, but he still gets put into a feud for a championship. He's still going to fight, I'm guessing, for the U.S. title. Mm-hmm. And like, that to me, still, even though it's the U.S. title and not the main championship, it still feels like you're, you know, giving him some sort of praise. It feels like you're giving him some sort of reward for failing your wellness policy. I would like to see Roman be put into, like, just, I'm not saying shelved or not used. I'm just saying, like, he could fight with somebody that doesn't have a belt, and they could have a feud and just, you know, dislike each other over anger or some event that occurred. But, having him in another title match just feels like, once again, a reward. And it would feel like that if Brock wins at SummerSlam. It would feel like they don't care. You know?
That's interesting. I didn't think about that. I thought, I just assumed the U.S. title is such a demotion considering where Roman's been the last few months, that it's enough to kind of, you know, maybe to check him a little bit. Like, you don't have to be anywhere in the conversation for the top of this card. Like, you're at this point, looking at this lineup, it's almost like an afterthought match. You know what I mean? So I feel like that is a demotion. I don't know.
It is. I'm not taking away from it. I'm just saying, to a lot of people on the roster, fighting for the U.S. title wouldn't be a demotion. It would be a privilege, you know? And so when you're talking about someone like Titus O'Neil got suspended for 60 days for touching Vince McMahon, it just seems kind of insane to me that Roman, you know, at least doesn't get, you know, like I said, he can still be featured on TV. He can be there. I mean, you can even give him a rivalry against someone like Jericho or something. That's going to be a relevant, you know, big name, not just, you know, nobody. I'm not saying like put him in a rivalry with Darren Young or, you know, somebody, you know, it's just one of those things that I just don't think Roman Reigns is. It's still weird to me that he's still getting a title shot in some way, you know, but they have so much invested at him at this point, I think, that they can't really, you know, really pull the plug 100% on him.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. We'll get to that match. I mean, I guess, well, since we're here, we may as well talk about it. But So Rusev and Roman, who goes over here? Who's the U.S. champion at the end of SummerSlam?
Oh man, I want to say Rusev is. I feel like Rusev is. I feel like it kind of just coincides with what I was just saying. But man, to give Roman a belt after this, like this soon, that just it. I don't know, man. I'm not a stickler for rules, and I know what Roman was doing was essentially it's, you know, whatever. We don't even know because they don't have to tell us and they didn't tell us. But obviously the assumption is he was doing something to keep up, you know, with performance enhancing in some way. And that's all for the company that he's doing it for. You know, like even when you really want to look at him as being like a cheater or a bad guy for doing it, he's doing it so he can keep up with the demand of the thing that they're asking him to do. So I think at the end of the day, they're not frowning on him too much for missing that or failing that wellness test. I will say that one of my friends brought up to me that Rusev was in the middle of talking about cheating and Russia being accused of cheating for performance-enhancing drugs, and then Roman Reigns comes out. Like, could they not have picked a better topic?
I didn't think about that.
I know, I didn't either, but I was like, oh my God, they did. They totally, like, had him come out when Rusev was in the middle of talking about Russian athletes not being allowed to be in the Olympics because of PEDs. And,
wow.
You know, I don't know. That was a slight. Maybe they were trying to – that was one of those little digs that they like
maybe
to do.
Maybe it was a little dig. That's funny. Yeah. Oh, okay. So your pick is Rusev? Is that?
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with Rusev. I feel like I just feel too strongly about Roman, you know, not getting it. There'll be shenanigans. It won't be a clean victory. I'm sure Lana will get in the way or something like that. But
yeah, I honestly wouldn't mind Roman taking this title only because I would like to see Rusev kind of moving up a little bit. And I think that'd be interesting. I feel like he's ready for a main event type of opportunity. Maybe, I don't know.
No,
but
he is.
But he's been a great U.S. champ though. So I think that him having time to come out and get on the mic has been awesome. So I would like to see that continue. So only if the plan is to move him up, I'd be okay with Roman taking it.
Well, and the U.S. title thing feels like it's putting him in a, you know, in that very predictable place that they would for, you know, somebody that's not from the United States, like a villain character like that, you know, it just feels too much like they're stereotyping him. And by doing that with the U.S. title, or at least, you know, just having it be the U.S. title and him being so anti-U.S., it feels like it's holding him back, like not just because of the level the title is, but just the storylines that they're doing with it. You know, it's kind of like Jack Swagger holding it. You're like, yeah, I get it, but come on.
You know? It's a little played out, I think. Exactly. So, yeah, I would like to see. I would be okay with it ending to Roman. And maybe we get a whole new U.S. Open Challenge thing from Roman and we get good matches. And I'd be okay with that.
And it wouldn't surprise me because it seems like Roman is following in the John Cena footsteps with the crowd reaction and everything. So I would see them using something very similar to what, you know, got John Cena favor with the crowd, which was that U.S. Open Challenge. So, it could work.
Yeah. All right. So back to the Universal Championship, which no one's seen yet. I think the name's terrible, but I hope that this is a cool looking belt at least. I don't know. Have you heard anything about that? Any rumors, anything about what the
belt haven't. Might... I saw like a... It looked like a winged belt, but it was... I think it was fake. I don't think it was real design, but it looked very winged eagle-esque.
Okay. Yeah, I read something that they were thinking about going back to that type of design. And I don't know. I mean, that belt was cool, but we'll see. I think it's got to be something completely new.
I like the World Championship belt a lot right now. I think they really nailed it with that one. And I like the Women's Championship looking, you know, like the Men's Championship and everything that they've done so far. So I have faith in them. It's kind of like with the music. Like, I used to hate their music at one point, but now, especially like the music of the guys coming up in NXT, I love so much of it that I've just, it's like, I went from having no faith in them to put together original music to being like, okay, you guys have my 100% trust now.
Nice. All right. So Rollins and Balor, who you got?
I'm going to say Rollins in that one. It still doesn't feel like it's Balor's time yet.
Yeah, I feel like it has to be Rollins right now. That's legit. It's believable for now. I think Balor maybe at a future WrestleMania can get his moment, but not yet.
It also feels like they want to put the belt back on Seth because he technically lost it while being injured. So they always seem to want to give back to those guys and get them the championship again.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Ambrose and Ziggler. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Ambrose retains.
Yeah, I feel like he does. I'm hoping Dolph maybe gets like a monster heel push.
Yeah.
Maybe in the weeks leading up, maybe he just goes really, really bad guy, which I would love to see. Just to kind of get some heat in this feud. I feel like it's just warming up. But, you know, I feel like somebody's gotta, I don't know, take it to the next level. And I feel like Dolph going heel could do it. Make me more interested, I think.
No, you're absolutely right. I feel like the best thing Ziggler's done before all of this was, you know, there was a backstage segment where he was on the cell phone. He was talking to someone. He was like, huh? Yeah, no, I lost again. It's no big deal. Whatever. And then he went on. And like, it was funny because it was very, you know, it was Dolph briefly admitting storyline wise that he's been a big loser and that he hasn't been doing well. And again, that's that like small bits of reality that I like that they, you know, put in there. If you're making Dolph lose every week, there's no reason why you shouldn't make that part of the storyline, you know?
Yeah.
And I think him as a heel is the exact way to go. I think he has lost everything when he had his face turn, and it hasn't worked since then. So I think that this is going to be really good for him. Even if he doesn't win the title, if this is what pushes him over the edge to be the heel again, then I think he can contribute a lot to SmackDown because they're going to need him. They're limited on their roster, so they're going to need a strong heel character that has the history he does.
I think so. All right. So Sasha Banks and Charlotte Women's Championship.
Sasha retains.
I think so. What I mean, again, I got excited and crazy, and we got emotional when Sasha won that. Do you think they should have saved that for SummerSlam?
Yeah. Yes, I do. You know, I felt like Raw had two fantastic moments that didn't need to both be on the same show. You know, and again, that's why they came out of the gate so strong. You know, it was an amazing night from beginning to end, and it had tournament aspects to it. It had, you know, the feels with Sasha winning. It had, you know, the amazement of Finn. It had, you know, all of the new guys being there. There was a lot to enjoy about it, but it didn't need to have all of that. It almost set the bar too high, and it makes the following weeks kind of look a little boring. And like you said, yeah, there could have been a great moment at SummerSlam when Sasha won. I think, again, they're going to crown a new championship, and they're going to have a lot of other stuff going on, so maybe they feel they didn't need all of that at SummerSlam, so they wanted to come out of the gate strong on Raw. But yeah, I'm with you 100%. That feels like it should have been the way to go.
I think so, but I feel like, and I understand them wanting to make a really good first impression on this new era thing and the draft and all that, but I feel like they kind of shot their load. Like they can't reach that level of excitement again. Like,
right.
What else can be done to make it that exciting again? You know, so I don't know. Everything else will be a letdown by default. But anyway, moving on. John Cena, AJ Styles 2. I think is happening. So what do you predict goes down in this one?
I honestly have no idea. And I like that about it. I have no idea. I feel, once again, like John Cena is in total, I am putting everybody over phase right now in his career. Like I feel like, and I don't ever feel like that wasn't something John Cena wanted to do. I kind of feel like WWE did that to him, but now that he's in a position to actually have a say in things, I feel like he wants to, you know, build some guys up. So I feel like AJ Styles winning here is more important than John Cena winning. Could be wrong, but I feel like John Cena going on a little bit of a losing streak and, you know, needing to do the comeback thing is the best storyline for him on SmackDown.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So I think that you're right. I think AJ goes over, but didn't AJ beat him the first time as well?
Yeah. And I think that's the heel aspect of it. Like, maybe they'll do that to split it and have a third one, but I think it would give AJ just the perfect thing to hold over him and to, you know, taunt him about that he can't beat him, you know?
Yeah. All right. That's good. Next, Intercontinental title, The Miz versus Apollo Crews. Apollo became the number one contender in a triple threat match against Kalisto, Baron Corbin. So what do you think here?
I want Apollo to win so bad.
Yeah.
I want him to. I don't feel like it's going to happen.
I don't know if he's ready yet, but yeah. I think someone has to take it from Miz in a big fashion. I don't know.
I think he should be on NXT still. I think there's a lot of character aspects that he could have worked out on NXT that would have allowed him to be a little bit stronger on the main roster.
I can agree with that. I feel like he's just kind of there. Like he's a great athlete. He does amazing things and he just smiles and that's really it. Like,
and he's even good backstage. Like I'm not even going to knock, you know, his the times that he's had segments where he spoke or did whatever. It's been fine. I don't know what his character is and I don't feel like he does either. I think that a lot of guys get that right away. And I think NXT is the perfect place to, at least if you have an idea of it, figure out what you can do to make it a thing. Like, you know, there's Ty Dillinger with the 10 thing. That's a perfect example. That went from being like kind of a little joke, you know, picking fun at him or whatever, to him holding up a giant, you know, ringside card now that says 10 when he comes out to the ring and having the crowd like chant 10, 10, 10. You know, it's the dumbest thing ever, but he made it his thing and he embraced it and fully, you know, flourished the whole perfect 10 gimmick, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just something like that sometimes. It's taking something that people, you know, a joke or something that you had in a rivalry that you carry over and make into your thing. You know, that's all it takes sometimes.
Yeah. I can agree with that. I felt that way initially because I wasn't watching a lot of NXT when Sami Zayn was there. And I felt like when he came up, I was like, where's the character, you know? But maybe they feel like you know him already, so they don't need it.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, he spent a lot of time just locked in this Kevin Owens thing where he's like, here's a guy who just doesn't like Kevin Owens. That's it. That's all you got.
That's his character.
You know? That's his character.
No, so, totally. No, yeah, totally. You're absolutely right.
I was waiting for a little more development. I mean, he's awesome in the ring, but right. I think some character is necessary for both of them, I think, to go a little higher.
They got lazy with it, and especially with Sammy, like you're saying, the whole underdog character and everything that he was developed in NXT, and they just kind of assumed that you know that when he's up on the main roster. I felt like Kevin Owens definitely owned what he was about and made you know what he was about in the first 30 seconds of being out there. But yeah, Sammy's a little different. You know, he's definitely just the true baby face that gets beat a lot and then will have that amazing, you know, Daniel Bryan moment where he wins a championship or wins a big match or whatever. And I think that they're still trying to make him be that on the main roster, but they're waiting for the perfect time to put him through, you know, essentially the storyline that they probably already did in NXT. You know, he had a storyline with Cesaro where he couldn't beat Cesaro forever. And it was, you know, that was it. That was the whole storyline, was that he just couldn't beat him and that Cesaro was always better than him. And, you know, it was really, really fun when he finally ended up going over.
Yeah, that's true. As of now, I don't see a match for Sami Zayn, but maybe something will happen in the next couple of weeks. But tag team titles will probably be on the line. New Day, we're thinking going against the Club, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows. What would be your pick there?
Oh, I feel like it's time for the New Day to drop them. But I don't want the New Day to ever drop them, so I'm conflicted on that. I just think like Anderson and Gallows are really good. They have a lot of pedigree coming into this, and they could have been more than just AJ Styles henchmen initially. I think that kind of, you know, that pairing made them into just his lackeys for a little while there. So I think throwing the championships on them now is a good move. I think it would build them up and, you know, the New Day is going to be at that level forever. I feel like, like until the New Day really, you know, until the New Day breaks up or something like that happens, I think that they're a draw with or without the belts. And that's what you're always looking for as, you know, a wrestling company. You're looking for those guys to be able to be something fans want to see, and they're that, you know, absolutely 100%. So I would say that, you know, taking the championships off of them just helps to extend, you know, that to more matches, more opportunities for other things you want to see. But you know, I always want to see the New Day. And honestly, they're kind of like one of the few things or few acts that I want to see just speak. You know, like, I don't even need to see a New Day match. If they're just going to come out and entertain me and make jokes and do that kind of stuff, I'm absolutely cool with that. And that's rare to find.
Truth. Okay, so I agree. I think it's probably time, you know, with them passing the record of longest reign, it's time to give them up, and they're still just as big, just as popular without them. And I think that it'll elevate, you know, Anderson and Gallows more so than, you know, or I think enough to make those guys a really, really dominant force, which could then make way for maybe another, you know, young team to feud with them, either Enzo and Cass, or I don't remember who else they have on Raw, but I'm sure there's somebody else.
Yeah, but Enzo and Cass right now are at that position too, man. I mean, they've already kind of started that rivalry with the club a bit, so it would be a nice progression, and, you know, it could come after, you know, the New Day get their, you know, rematch and have that kind of work its course out, and then have Enzo and Cass be the next contenders. But it definitely is set up that way. And man, I haven't seen a tag team like Enzo and Cass get the reaction that they get in, you know, 15 years, man.
It's been a long time, yeah.
God, I mean, as much as everybody loves the New Day, that was a slow thing that came along. And with a lot of things that happen with NXT, Enzo and Cass, I mean, a lot of things that come, like, even Finn Balor coming out on Monday Night Raw and doing the, you know, raising his hands up thing, I was a little disappointed that more of the crowd wasn't into it. But every single person in the crowd knew, like, every word of Enzo's, you know, his promo. So it's amazing how big those guys are now.
Oh, man. Yeah, they're huge. Sky's the limit, I think. I think they're in line for, like, a big, probably WrestleMania moment as well.
Yes.
Probably next one. Who knows?
Right.
And speaking of them, I think that they're in a match versus Jericho and Kevin Owens. Who do you got in that one?
I think Enzo and Cass go over.
Yeah.
I think that'll be like an early match, but I do love the pairing of Jericho and Owens. I hope that they keep them like relatively close together for a while, because I think there's a lot of entertainment value there.
Absolutely. They're great. They're great together.
And then they can fight each other, and then that's going to be amazing as well.
Absolutely. All right. So let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about some sports. I got two sports things I want to talk about briefly, and this probably won't be brief, though. But the Arizona Diamondbacks are not having the season that they were hoping for.
Oh, and, God.
Right,
or the season I was hoping for.
Or anybody in Arizona was hoping for. They're currently in last place. So, real quick, what do the Diamondbacks need right now? Is it starting at the top? Do you need a new general manager? What would you do?
I honestly think that a coaching change is needed, both at the pitching coach and the manager. I think that it's just been a real disaster for these guys, and, you know, specifically the pitching. Like, it's crazy. It's like it's like pitchers are coming in and they're like, yeah, you know, the fastball, you can't throw that here. What do you mean I can't throw that here? You can't throw fastballs here, so figure something else out. You know, like, that's the only thing I can imagine, because there's such a lack of success. And then you have someone like Addison Reed, who, you know, was just a choke artist, if you want to call him that, here in Arizona when he was here. And then he goes off to the Mets and he has like a 1.66 ERA. You know, it's
ridiculous.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of things to it. I mean, the ballpark itself isn't, you know, as much as people want to act like it's a fine sized ballpark, it's, you know, it's definitely a home run hitter's ballpark. And, you know, they bring in, you know, the wrong personnel. They're needed to keep guys like Brad Ziegler, who are, you know, ground ball, boring pitchers that, yeah, they're not going to be powerful. They're not going to get a lot of strikeouts, but they'll keep the score at, you know, 3-2 and five, you know, less than five runs every game. So, like, to that degree, yeah, that falls on the GM. That falls on Stewart and whatever him and Tony La Russa are doing. But, I mean, with the moves that they made, I feel like, yeah, they sacrificed, you know, here and there, and there's some questionable things, but people weren't calling for their heads at the beginning of the season. I felt like the moves they made, people were very happy with, you know, even though they spent a lot of money. It just, when it comes down to it, it doesn't feel like the coaching was there. It kind of reminds me of the Nationals when Matt Williams was their coach. The Nationals were predicted to be, you know, the World Series contenders, and they didn't even make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they had an amazing roster. And then, you know, they changed to Dusty Baker, and here they are one season later, and they're one of the best teams in baseball with very few, you know, roster changes.
Yeah.
It's not like they went out and overhauled themselves. They're just a better team. So I credit managing, and I credit, you know, the ability to get guys prepared and keep guys healthy and all of that. But I definitely think at this point, you know, it if for no other reason, it gives you something to, you know, have a new start about. And if they don't fire Chip Hale, I definitely think that the pitching coach needs to go at the very, very absolute least. Someone in management needs to go for the way this team wins.
It can't be acceptable to be where they are. Like,
exactly.
It just,
no,
just
that's
can't be
exactly.
Okay. Like, some head's got to roll.
And man, I hate believing in curses and whatnot, but the way they talked about, because I don't know if you were aware of the stadium situation and the way they wanted, you know, there was kind of a fight in the beginning of the season to get renovations done, or else the Diamondbacks were somewhat threatening to move out of Chase Field into another location in Arizona. And they're the one of the worst home teams this season. So it's like, I don't believe in curses, but man, you went and talked bad about your home and you can't win all. Like, that's just a little suspicious to me.
Oh man, wow, there may be something to that. Jeez. All right, okay. And last Phoenix sports issue is Amari Stoudemire just recently retired as a New York Knick. And I thought I was crazy when I raised the question of, hey, why not Phoenix?
Right.
You know, where you had good years. And,
yeah.
You know, not where.
Rookie of the year. Remember, Yao Ming was supposed to win it and you just stole it from him.
All those great years and dunks and pick and rolls and all that. So, anyway, but he decided New York is where he would retire. So, what do you think about that? Like, what's. Do you understand? Do you feel like, yeah, that was okay? Now
I felt like he's had a lot of animosity with the team in general, and I think that, like, when he left to the Knicks is when he felt like he had achieved some sort of superstar status. But from what I read, it sounded like he reached out to the Suns, and there's a conflict. I mean, there's some people that are saying that he reached out to the Suns to actually be on the Suns roster for the season. And the deal that he made with the Knicks was, you know, one of those one-day contracts where he could just retire with them. And so I don't know exactly what to believe, but the way Amari sounded was like he reached out to the Suns and they weren't really interested in doing it. So I don't know who to believe. I think that's a big mistake if it was true. If it fell on the Suns, I think, you know, especially with the way things have been going for the Suns and not being a very good team themselves, I think it's smart to do something like that, and then you can have an Amari Stoudemire bobblehead night, and he can come out and he can wave, and maybe he can do a dunk for old time's sake, and, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. But like, I don't see a need to necessarily have, you know, animosity with a player that's retiring. And I mean, man, there's a part of me that's like, even if he was asking for a 1-year deal, is that so much to like? Is that so bad? Like,
yeah, I don't think
he could have played a mentor role on this team. I mean, I don't know how bad his knees are, but he could have still done something. He could have contributed in a slight way, and, you know, if nothing more, you could have had it be like the Kobe retirement tour, where people came out just to see him, you know, play his 5 minutes and wave to the crowd and do his thing before he finally retired.
Yeah.
Just from a PR standpoint, it seems like it would have made sense to me. So I don't know. At least it shows to me. I mean, the one thing, if you look at it from that standpoint, the Suns seem very serious about rebuilding. I think they had a really good draft this year. I think that they've made some good moves, but they're being patient about it. They're not like, you know, they're not thinking like, oh, we're going to go for a championship this year. They can see it being two seasons down the road, but I feel like they're putting themselves in a position to focus on that instead of, you know, what a lot of bad teams do, which is just kind of, you know, figure out a way to keep fans coming to games.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, and also in current Amari Stoudemire news, I don't know if you heard this, is that he signed with a team in Israel.
Yes.
Where he's going to be playing a little bit. So he says he's healthy, he can play. I was reading a little bit through the article, and then he wanted to come back into the NBA this year, but only to a contender.
Yeah.
So he had reached out in the past to the Suns, and they were not interested. And so this past offseason, he didn't reach out to them.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gotcha. That's where the conflicting report came around about when he did that. But yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I think that kind of shows he still thinks he can play. And I mean, you know what? I don't fault these guys for going to Europe. Like, I'd go to Europe just on a vacation, let alone if someone was going to pay me to go and play a sport that I'm pretty good at and I'm still significantly gooder or better than better than the people that you're playing against. You know, like it's still like going out there against the JV team for these guys. And I mean, even if they're not superstars in these leagues, they're still making money and still playing a game they love. And I mean, I don't know, man. If I had the opportunity, I'd probably be one of those guys that they were like, man, Derek is still trying to play basketball. this rec team pays him $500, come out every Saturday, you know, like,
you get to play a game you love and it's fun and you're able to compete and you can pay. Like, come on. Plus, I'd play it till I couldn't walk anymore.
Exactly. And it kind of goes to some of the wrestlers that have talked about, like, no, I really love Japan. It was hard for me to make the decision to come over to WWE from Japan. It's because, like, as much as we love America, sometimes it's pretty awesome to live in a different country and, you know, just absorb another culture and be there. So especially when, you know, like a lot of the NBA players that go and do that, they have the luxury of being like, if I don't like it, I'm only here for, you know, 8 months or whatever.
All right. So I think we are at the end of our time. We've gone a little long this time, but it's been a good conversation and I appreciate that. So let the people know how they can get in touch with you. Like, what's the easiest way? Where do they find your work?
Yeah, absolutely. Check me out on thesportscave.com, and cave is with a K. And you can also check out The Steel Cage, and that's spelled like a normal person spells stuff, thesteelcage.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter at @cap_caveman with a K. Or if you want to send me an email, I'm at derek@thesteelcage.com.
Awesome. All right. So I asked all my guests to end us off with a song. So this is the time where you get to pick a musical selection. And it's usually something that either mentions a wrestler, maybe a dedication song to a wrestler, maybe a wrestler entrance theme, or just a song that you would come out to if you were a wrestler. Just be creative with it. Whatever you like.
Oh, man. A song I would come out to if I was a wrestler would be Gold and a Pager by the Cool Kids.
Great.
Just because that is the baddest jam to like walk to. I don't know why that's such an amazing song to walk out to, but it just has an amazing amount of attitude to it. But honestly, I think another thing I'd have to pick is your New Day Rocks song, man, from Matt Mania. I love that song so much. I'm a strong believer that the New Day need to use that as their theme song. So,
that would be amazing. We should start some sort of campaign or something.
Yes. Because they need something new. You know, they need it new. It would be perfect timing. It would inject some new life into it. But it's, you know, it's their song still, so it's not a distant variation. But it just feels so right.
Wow.
Huh. It does. When I hear the original now, it feels like it's missing.
This is my raps.
The right words to it, right?
Oh wow, I appreciate that, man. All right, so we're gonna go out to the Cool Kids, who are just recently got back together. They were like broke up for like the last 5 years. Nobody really noticed, but I noticed. I got excited. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited they're coming back. All right, so we're gonna go out with some Cool Kids, Golden the Pager. Thanks so much, Derek, for hanging out. And I will see you on the interwebs.
With a little bit of gold in a page. With a little bit of gold in a page. With gold in a page. With a little bit of gold in a page. Page. Gold page.
Cool kids.
With a little bit of gold in a page.
Cool kids.
With a little bit of gold in a page.
Yup.
With a little bit of gold page. With a little bit of gold in a page.
Pedal down the foothills, wheelies on the front wheel.
Real chuck?
Not for play home, bro. I made those and those. I skate those and these. I take those and wear them like I made those. Even if I don't, cuz though, I'll take those like that. Put them in my knapsack, snap the top latch. Four finger ring on my belt buckle strap. Got a hole.
falling off my ass. Then you gotta check these Nikes at the bottom of my pants. Then you gotta check my hip, cause my beeper's on blast. Just got it activated, he ain't even gotta ask. So if my phone's off, you can page my ass. So I guess what it is I'm who I'm is, and I'm well aware. Gold ropes what I wear, and they big and they hang, and they swing here to there, and I'm here.
With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold.
I'm a graduate of Cooley High. Yeah. The last day of school, threw my hat in the air with a new pair of shoes with the gum. So pose for the class picture, and I flick like a glass fixture when the tip of your finger hits the switch. So with a little bit of gold, Motorola pager, a fresh haircut, clean shave with the razor. It's a sickness where God is my witness. Been blessed with this gift since the day before Christmas. I'm trying, I am nice with the science on how to stay king of this jungle just like lions. I gotta stay humble and move just like a bumblebee. Can't let you in great trouble me, no. So please, no steeds biting, I'm just a teenager.
With a little bit of gold in a pager. With a little bit of gold in a pager.